Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry and put that pools in your money and hold that money and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly. They can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go over on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week. 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, I hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out. He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
All right, we're still in January. Happy New Year to those that I haven't spoken to yet in this year, but anyway, Happy New Year. Now, this topic that we're going to cover today was not my idea, but it was brought up by one of our listeners, Delmar America, who has his own podcast right here on Blog Talk Radio, Fan Passion. He's got about 50 of them in the can right now, and he produces them new every day. But Delmar America, he came up, I had a paradigm shift, and this happened about, we had a conversation about an hour ago. Family capital. Family capital. Now, you've heard me talk about social capital, and that's the social capital is essentially, I'll just use an example. Let's say you're just really hungry, okay, and you don't have any money on you. However, you feel comfortable enough to go to maybe your best friend or an acquaintance of yours, could be a coach, but you have enough goodwill or social capital between you two where you can feel comfortable enough. Look, man, look, can you loan me $5 so I can buy a Big Mac? Something to eat. I'm hungry. Okay. And that person reaches into their pocket, or, of course, we have mobile apps now with, digital wallets. They give you something from Cash App or PayPal, and they pay, transfer $5 to you that way, or just pay for the meal from their digital wallet or cash or whatever it might be. That's social capital. That's social capital illustrated. Well, we're going to be talking about today family capital. Family capital. Now, technically, nobody on this planet is born poor. Somebody might say you were. You can't come into this planet unless you have a basic family, which is mother, father, and then you. That's three people. But let's say the mother and father are not together anymore. You and the mother, that's family. That's capital. Family capital, your intellectual property between you two, the skill sets between you two, all that can be converted into economic resources. So we're all born with economic advantages, some more than others, depending on how you measure wealth. So that's our topic for today. And as illustrated, we're going to play this next clip. It's less than 2 minutes long on the Jewish phenomenon.
I want to tell you about the first time I was 21 years old and I saw $6 million of cash right in front of me. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. That's what $6 million looks like. Insane. How the hell can I get this kind of money one day? And the guy who had the $6 million was a Jewish businessman who owned dealerships in San Fernando Valley area. And he gave me an advice at 21 that completely changed the way I do business till today. By the way, if you get value from today's message, give it a thumbs up and subscribe to the channel. Here's what this Jewish businessman told me. I said, how is it possible you got this much money and you're in your mid-30s, $6 million cash? He says, Patrick, there's one thing you need to know about Jews. I said, what's that? When one makes money, five make money. I said, what? He says, when one of us makes money in a business, five other Jews make money because we like to make money in groups. I said, so what's the benefit of that? He said, everybody keeps doing business together. He says, too many people, ethnicities, nationalities, cultures, backgrounds, they just want to be the one making money. They don't want anybody else around them making money. And then eventually they wonder, how come nobody wants to go into business with me? Because when you make money, nobody else makes money. So ask yourself the question. Number one, the person you're working for, does he make money and do you make money? And number two, the people that work with you, who report to you, if they give their best, do they also make good money the way you're making money? If the answer is yes, you're in a great place. Go do your part, and eventually you'll make your money like that Jewish mentor shared with this 21-year-old 24 years ago, 23 years ago. If you got value from this video, give it a thumbs up and subscribe to the channel. And if you've never watched the video, 20 Rules of Money, How Actually Money Works, click here to watch the video, 20 Rules of Money. Take care, everybody.
Okay. And before we go to the book, The Jewish Phenomenon, that audio, some of the topics we want to cover today. Today's podcast is titled Family Capital, Turning Family Wealth into Paychecks. Family Capital, Turning Family Wealth into Paychecks. So whoever who's ever listening to me right now, this is for everybody who listens to this podcast. You've got family capital. And we're going to give examples of how you can turn your family wealth. Every family has wealth. Your family on Section 8, you got wealth. Unrealized wealth that you don't even know you have. So we're going to hopefully, some of you have a paradigm shift today, but family capital, turning family wealth into paychecks. Some of the topics we're going to cover, and this is in our program notes here on Blog Talk. Family capital, family capitalism, family paychecks. We're going to give examples of that. Family wealth. Delmar America, who he's a gentleman. He's got a blog of his own here on podcast. I mean, here on Blog Talk Radio, Fan Passion. Let's look him up, Delmar America. And that's America spelled with two A's. Fan Passion, look it up online. He's got about 50 programs in there. He gave me this whole concept about an hour ago. Amish economics, Jewish economics, which we just heard an audio on that, which is less than 2 minutes long. Jewish people, culturally speaking, on a critical mass basis, maybe not all of them, but on a critical mass basis, when they do business, there's as the guy said, at least five others making money simultaneously at the same time. But you don't have to be Jewish to do that. The Mennonites do it. Chinese do it. Native Americans do it. Various tribes, and everybody belongs to a tribe or could belong to one. And then we'll talk about those things. So we're going to go into the Jewish, the Jewish Phenomenon, which is a book, and then we'll get back into the conversation of, and once again, I have to give credit to Delmar America. Today's topic is family capital, turning family wealth into paychecks. We'll be back right after this.
Hey, everybody. Eddie Bales here, and I'm excited. I want to share something with you that I reread a book that I read in the past. It's a book called The Jewish Phenomenon. I heard about it lots of different times from different leaders that I follow, and I said, let me check this book out. Sounds interesting, because I've noticed, you know, maybe you've noticed that, you know, the Jewish community tends to be very prosperous, very wealthy, if that makes sense. And if you want to do what someone else is doing, hey, the best thing to do is to do it, to duplicate and replicate what they're doing, and you can have the same success. So, you know, some of you guys may catch this on a replay. I'm going to, you know, start providing some value for you. And if you get value, then just give me some likes, give me some shares, give me some comments. If you want to get some feedback. But, you know, today I'm going to share with you a little bit out of this book called The Jewish Phenomenon. And one of the things it says is seven keys to the enduring wealth of a people, right? So not just wealth for one person, but wealth for a group of people, right? And so maybe you want your family to create a legacy of wealth. I know that's something that I'm looking to break right now, and it is going to happen. It is happening. It's already happening right now, so I'm really excited about it. But let's just jump right in. I'm actually only going to share just two things, actually, out of the seven, because I don't want to keep you guys all day. But I wanted to share two things, really, that I thought were very, very impactful. Number one is one of their philosophies is they're really, really, really big on education. Like, being a lifelong learner, you can see all these books here in the bookshelf here. I'm obviously a big reader, right? And that's just one bookshelf in my office. I got several. But so, you know, being a lifelong learner, like someone who is always looking to learn and grow, you know, that's one thing that they stress from a baby to in the Jewish community is you are going to get the best education possible. Because, see, if you know better, you do better. And when you have more education, not only do you put yourself in better environments, but you also become a better person, obviously, just from the information and the knowledge and the training that you're getting. So, you know, education, one thing I thought that was pretty profound, let me just look at my notes here, is that it said, build your child's self-esteem. And that is huge, right? Because, you know, if a child tends to have a lower self-esteem as a child, then they tend to grow up with that and carry that low self-esteem, right? And so what's in the Jewish community, they actually start from at birth, and they start pushing them in situations where they're constantly around people and they're speaking in front of people, they're speaking in front of audience. They just give them opportunities where they can develop and grow their growth as a child, right? So education is huge. It's very, 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 very important. Let me show you something else that it said. It said, develop and demonstrate informed and literate habits, meaning that obviously you could read, but you become a person that can demonstrate as a speaker maybe, or as a you know, just somebody who's putting themselves out there in the community. So and then the other thing it says is that they create the education expectation. So the expectation is you're going to get as much knowledge as possible. You're going to go to school. You're going to go to college. You're going to go to further your education, because that is just what they do, right? So that's a big one, is education, right? Matter of fact, there's a statistic that I don't have the statistic handy, but there's a statistic that says that, oh, thanks for the likes. There's a statistic that says that, you know, when you have a certain education, you're going to get a certain level of income. And when you raise that education to another form, you're going to get another level of income. So the more income, the more education you have, the more your income is going to go up, if that kind of makes sense. The second thing that it went over that I thought was really, really big is they teach their children to be professionals. So you're either going to be a doctor, a lawyer, or a business person. So you're going to be some type of professional. Even if you're not a doctor or a lawyer, you're going to have some type of, you're going to be a professional, if that makes sense. And one of the things I thought was really, really powerful is it even said in the book, by the way, the book, The Jewish Phenomenon, really, really good book, but it said that even if you're a professional, your goal is to be that professional, but part-time, after that, your goal is to move into entrepreneurship, right? Because they said, oh, here's another one, a big one. I don't want to go through all my notes, but I'm just excited, if you can't tell, right? Hey, Ms. Pastor Parker, good to see you here. But one of the things that it said is, oh, this one was right. This was huge. It said, if you are not an owner, you are an outsider. If you're not an owner, you're an outsider. I thought that was critical, right? Because that what that's saying to me is that they want you not just to work for somebody. There's another thing it said in the book, and I'll put my book down. It said that you rarely find someone in the Jewish community that works with their hands, if that makes sense. Unless they're a surgeon or something of that nature. But they typically have the mindset of, I'm going to be a professional. I'm going to be a manager. I'm going to be a supervisor. I'm going to be someone at the top. And there's nothing wrong with thinking that way, because their parents teach them that growing up, right? So as they grow up, this is just the way they are, right? And it's no wonder why they seem to excel in everything that they do, is because that's how they're taught. So, you know, why am I sharing this with you guys? Because I want your culture to be that as well. I want you, I mean, it's not something that's set apart just for the Jews. This is set apart for all of us. And that's why this book is so powerful, because if we all start to adopt those values that they have, of course, some of those things are, you know, are not overspending, and some of those things are, you know, investing and things like that. But some of these habits, if we just start to adopt some of those habits, we can put ourselves in a situation where not just we become successful, but our whole legacy, our whole tree. It only took one, Winfrey to change the whole, one Oprah to change the whole Winfrey tree, right? One Jordan to change the whole Michael Jordan tree, if that makes sense. So we could be the one that completely changes our entire legacy if we start to adapt these things and then start to turn around, not just keep it for ourselves, but start turning it around and teaching others. And that's why I wanted to do this quick video, even though I'm not a video person, so bear with me, guys. But I'm going to start doing some more videos because I've learned a lot of things and I've grown in a lot of ways, and I just want to start imparting some of the knowledge and the wisdom that I've learned and just start teaching other people. So the two things that the Jewish community really stressed out of the seven, there's seven things, I'm not going to go over all seven, but the two things that I want to stress today is knowledge and education. And so one of the things that I teach people that are around me is read 10 pages of a good book every day, right? Read 10 pages, because look, if you read 10 pages every single day for 30 days, that's 300 pages. You at least read a book a month. And if you read a book a month, after 12 months, you've read 12 books, right? And if you've read 12 books, you've done more than the average person, because the average person never reads a book after high school, right? Seriously. Right? And so you just set yourself apart from everyone else simply because you decided to just do a simple mundane task of reading 10 pages every single day. So that's one thing. And then the second thing is they're really keen on professional, being a professional, but moving into an entrepreneurship type of a role. So I'm not going to go through the whole book, but it says something about even after work, if you're working a job, you're moving yourself in a position where you're doing something entrepreneurial, right? And by the way, you know, for those of you who are looking and paying attention and you're looking for some type of an entrepreneurship that you'd like to get involved with that doesn't take a lot of time, feel free to reach out to me, and I love to help you with that. Love to maybe have a conversation with you on that. But listen, guys, I just appreciate you guys for just tuning in just for a little bit. I'm going to share more. If you like this, let me know, and then maybe I'll share more stuff. Continue to like, continue to comment, continue to share. Good to see you. For those of you who are on, Pastor Parker and Tanya, it's definitely good to see you guys. I love you guys. So God bless you all. Have a great night, and we'll see you all over the top.
All right. And that's, he gave a synopsis of two chapters out of the book, The Jewish Phenomenon, which if you got Kindle on your phone or device, probably download with me a chapter or two, you know, as Kindle does for free. And if you like it, you can buy the whole thing. But anyway, today's topic, which was created by Delmar America, Family Capital, Turning Family Wealth into Paychecks. That's his brainchild. And some of the things we're going to cover today, family wealth, social capital, which I already covered that, real Social Security. And real Social Security is made from your social connections, your family, your friends, your tribe. That's real Social Security, not a check that's coming from the government. Family capitalism, we're going to give examples of that. Family paychecks, and we're going to give an example right here in a few minutes on family paychecks. And then some of these ideas you can do yourself, so your family can receive family paychecks. Amish economics, Jewish economics, Mennonite economics, Chinese carryout paycheck. Now, this is a real simple example. Now, if you got a Chinese food, I eat Chinese food about once a month, and I have a menu. I got several menus, actually, but it's from the same place, because every time I order something and they deliver it, they always bring you a new menu. And the menu that I have, and you might have one in your house, and this is the exercise I want you to conduct. Count how many items are on that menu of the Chinese food carryout? On mine is anywhere from 200 to 300 items, probably over 300 items. Egg rolls, spring roll, ribs, shrimp fried rice, at least 20, 25, if not 30 different type of lunch special menus that are available Monday through Friday. Just that's 30 paychecks worth of themselves. Sesame chicken. And that's one of my favorite sesame chicken. They have a sesame chicken lunch special. But that's just one type of paycheck, and that costs like $6.50, something like that. If you order between 11 a.m. and 3 p.m., Monday through Friday only, you know, they've got the sub menu within the main menu of lunch specials. Each item, including the sodas, if you want chicken wings, if you want lo mein noodles, you want egg foo young, they have different types of egg foo young. Each one of those items listed with a price on it is a paycheck. If you go to the typical Chinese carryout, is a family typically working behind and, you know, and cooking and taking orders and all that. They might have a, if they do delivery, somebody outside the family that might do that. But families first when it comes to that. And the average Chinese food restaurant in the United States takes in $1.1 million, $1,100,000 a year. Oh, that's on average. All right, that's just carryout. Now, there's tribal wealth, and then later on we'll talk about earth water. Now, I want you to type into your search engine, Amish, because we're doing an exercise right here on family paychecks, turning, once again, family capital, turning the family's wealth into paychecks. Now, the wealth of the family are the individuals within the family. It could be the two-year-old toddler running around to the grandparents to everybody in between. Everybody's got a talent. Everybody has wealth. But when you combine that wealth, that's why I played, you know, the piece out of the Jewish phenomenon. You know, when one Jewish person makes, you know, they like to make money in groups. Well, certain communities or people within certain communities like to make money as a family. All right. Now, I want you to, you can follow me on this one. Type in any search engine, Yoder's Amish Village. Or type in dinner and lunch machine. Type in Amish menu. Amish menu. Or Yoder's, and that's Y-O-D-E-R, Yoder's Amish Village. And I'm going to look at their dinner and lunch menu. Now, what we're going to do with this, because most Amish businesses are family-based businesses. Mom, dad, the kids, it's a family-based business. Depending on the family, they might have several generations in there. So I'm right now, I'm online reading the menu of Yoder's, that's Y-O-D-E-R-S, or Yoder's restaurant, which is within the Amish Village, which is located in Yoder, Kansas, and that's a whole different podcast in itself. Okay, now, looking at the menu, at the top of the menu, they have the menu broken down into 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 subsects within one menu. They have a breakfast menu. They have a lunch and dinner menu. They have a dessert menu. They have a daily specials menu. They have a rewards menu. And they have an online, you know, you can order online. All right. And depending on the number of people that they have in their family, they might have one person that's, you know, that's in charge of breakfast, one's in charge of lunch and dinner crew, and on down the line. Because they make what they sell you for the most part. All right, now, let's count this down. The way we're going to do this is we're going to find each item on the menu. Each item on the menu is a paycheck. There's a profit built in to each and every one of these items. And a lot of these items, some of you listening can prepare the exact same meal. The difference is, with some people, is they have learned how to organize family wealth. Somebody has a what? We'll go through one moment. First thing, salads and more. Okay, they have homemade dressings. So somebody in the family has a talent. That's part of their wealth, family wealth pool of making dressings. So they have homemade French dressings. They have their own house dressing now. They have ranch, Thousand Islands, blue cheese, oil and vinegar. I mean, let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. They got at least six homemade dressings. Six. We haven't even got to the salad yet. Six of them. Somebody has a talent within that family for making homemade dressings. That's six paychecks. Let's see. But all right, that's six. And somebody keep a track of this for me, as number-wise. Next thing is a Cobb salad. So six, that's seven. Breaded and grilled chicken salad. That's eight. Taco salad, nine. Vegetable plate, 10. Once again, each and every item is a paycheck. A family that goes towards the family. Onion rings. What are we up to? What, 10? Soups. They have a homemade soup of the day. They have mom's homemade chili. They have a cup of soup and half sandwich. Somebody keep track of this. Let's see. 10, 11, 12, let's say I'm up to 13. Chicken and turkey, 14. Turkey roasted turkey breast and stuffing meal. Let's say 15. Baked chicken and stuffing, 16. Chicken fingers, 17. Seafood, shrimp and grits, shrimp. Let's see, 17. Crab cakes, 20. That's 20 paychecks. Now think about it. This family, and I haven't even finished counting, we're up to 20 paychecks. Now, the family started with mom and dad, as most families do. But they're not working, because a lot of mom and dads, dad's got a job, he brings home a paycheck, maybe weekly, maybe once every 2 weeks. Let's say he gets paid weekly. He gets four paychecks a month, and let's say mom gets paid once a week. So between the two of them, they have eight paychecks. But I've counted 20 just on this one menu out of this one business. All right, so it's got Yoder's Famous Fried Chicken. They got their house dressing. They have a half a chicken. They have a quarter chicken. They have sandwiches. They have grilled chicken breast. They have chicken salad. They have BLT. They have BLT with smoked turkey. They have pot roast melt. They have Southern Fried Chicken BLT. They have crab. you know, what, you know, are we, all right, let me go, 30, 31, 32, 33, 34, 35, 36, 37, 38, 39, 40, 41, 42. All right. Now we're up 42 dishes. Now let's get up to side dishes a la carte. They have mashed potatoes. That each one of these a la carte dishes, side dishes, equals a $3.50 paycheck. So they've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. They have 19 a la carte paychecks. Okay. So 30 with the, they got at least 50 items. 50 items to start today. So let's say through the course of a regular business day, somebody orders at least one of those, each one of, at least one of those. So that's 50 paychecks in a day. And let's say they go at it 5 days a week and take the weekends off. They've received 1,000 paychecks as a family in 1 month. Today's topic is family capital. And this could be replicated by anybody. Even if you have to, if you don't have a family, go out and get one. Now you got a blueprint on what to do. Let me see here. Let me go back to my studio. So some of you, you know, they're different type of business. I mean, we can do this with landscaping. We can do this with, I mean, any kind of business that you can think of. But family capital, turning family wealth into paychecks, the menu method of assessing what, and you don't have to be into the food business, but it could be landscaping, it could be making furniture, it could be cleaning houses. It's a different amount of things that you can. It's an incredible amount of wealth that's in every family. The thing is, the trick is you have to recognize it, you have to organize it, and then go from there. 773, your mic is open.
Good morning.
Good morning, Delmar. Thank you for the topic for today. Well, we're going to cover this at least once a month, at least. But I'll turn the mic over to you. The floor is yours. Share with us what you know.
Okay. First of all, I'd like to invite everyone, if you'd like to follow up on this, to my website. And there you will find more detailed information on what I believe and teach on this subject. And you'll find that I'm more, shall I say, adamant or dogmatic about it, because in my 50 years ministry as a Christian, getting my information from the Judeo-Christian values, the Holy Bible as we know, I've come to the conclusion that the Christian community as we know it, which I call a model of religion or many religions, has just missed it by a planet. What L.A. is talking about here about Jewish phenomenon and wealth and all of that. So my website is DelmarAmerica.us. And the key is in spelling the America. Delmar is D-E-L-M-A-R. America is spelled with two A's. A-A-M-E-R-I-C-A.us. Now that AA is together. It's not like some people want to put an A and then America skip. But like Aaron, Aaron is spelled A-A-R-O-N, so there's nothing unusual about having letters, a name that is spelled when two alphabets are together. So if you go to delmaramerica.us, and then you'll find several things there that should catch your eye. But you can find a list of podcasts, probably 50-plus, and there I cover many of these various topics relating to this subject here again. A little different approach, but you will, I believe, appreciate the idea and where we're going with it. And again, I am based upon a serious discovery on my part, having been, again, into ministry for 50-plus years most of my life, discover that the Christian community today teaches poverty, has been. Well, you probably won't find any church that would say that. But we believe that when you don't teach the positive, which you should, then by default you're teaching the result, the opposite of that, which is poverty. And so if you go to the site, check that out. But I just want to hit on a few things relating to what L.A. is saying. I appreciate so much him taking this direction. And one of the things you'll find in my broadcast and some of the writings that you find there is that from the time you were born, I'm talking to anybody that may listen, until they put you in the ground, you personally are somebody's paycheck. Because everything you do, somebody makes money off of it. So that's one fact. So I say, isn't it about time you start to get in and then start participating in getting a paycheck because you exist? So the idea of family capital, as I define it, has to do with the fact in every household there's a certain amount of cash flow, is the term we use, that has to come in to keep that household going. That includes the utilities and the food and clothing and whatever it takes to make it run, whether it be two people or 10 people. There's money coming through there and being spent to keep that unit functional. So we teach that instead of spending all that money, which is most things most people do, we said, let's take some of the same money you're spending and sow it. Now, think the difference between when we spend something, it goes out, and we get something once we consume or use that something, that's all it is. But if we sow something in the ground, we plant something, we get some return, and oftentimes almost everything you plant comes up, it multiplies, never just one thing. So our idea, the philosophy is take some of the same money you're spending, which I call family capital, and redirect it by sowing it into a particular way that we teach, and therefore get a receipt, a product from it. And that product is what we can use as family capital or create family wealth, dynasty wealth, wealth that is handed down from generation to generation. Now, in all respect, what has been said about the Jewish community and what they practice, that's not a by-chance thing or something to be suggested. If you check it out, the Jewish Hebrew history goes back 4,000 years. And from the biblical origin, go back to the book of Exodus, etc., you'll find they were taught to practice this. It wasn't something just a byproduct or that they discovered. This is instruction direct from God. And in our Christian community today, the Western community of Christianity, we just left it out. Therefore, you find Christians today who are very prosperous, we say. God has blessed us. But when you're in debt, that's not a blessing. Nowhere in the Bible you find that debt is a blessing. And we find that Christians live in the finest houses, drive the biggest cars being made, and the clothes, and the jewelry, and they owe. That's debt. That's not what God taught for his people. Not the Jewish, nor the Christian, or anybody else. So again, quite a deep subject. And what I'll say, if you listen to any of the recordings that I have, you'll never get the whole from any one of them. You'll take a series of listening to different ones. No matter which one you select, you'll find something you'll probably learn from there. But again, it's a whole way of looking at life. It's a paradigm shift. And again, we are going all out, I am, to teach, train, and coach people on how to look at this. Now, it's a choice. It's a decision. And just like much of what L.A. says, we have options. But in this country, oftentimes, we have followed some of the old model of our faith or whatever that is. And there is opportunity there to take another look at what things, what you've been taught. And you may decide, hey, there's another option. Maybe I need to understand the principle of wealth, because here again, because we have a slave heritage, we don't find hundreds of years of example of wealth in the black community. Yes, we do find some. Yes, there are some that are very powerful, very few, but they are there. But when we look at, as in the Jewish phenomenon approach and what the young man shared, when we look at those people, or we look at the Amish people, you'll find that they're following something direct, systematically. And by the laws of God, the results will always come out the same. You know, 2 + 2 = 4 and stuff like that. And in fact, you'll find we shared how that 1 + 1 = 2, but 1 + 1 is also equal 3. And we haven't learned about that third one. We haven't learned that 1 + 1 = 3. We don't teach that. But it's right there in the book. And when we get into that kind of thinking and understanding, you'll find that there's a whole different world that we could take the same money that's coming into our households every day, monthly, annually, and by doing specific things by design, we can create family, passion, paychecks. That's what we talk about on the broadcast. That's, again, that's DelmarAmerica.us. And once you go there, now you find that we're under construction, you find products that we're not quite in on the market yet, but again, we're working on that. But the information to give you some additional idea of what we're talking about, and this family capital, we all have potential family capital. It's how we understand its definition and meaning, and talking about it won't make the difference. It has to be practiced. And again, I want to thank L.A. for bringing this up. As he said, we'll continue on this thought repeatedly, hopefully this year, end of 23. We can all look back and see that we put into practice some of these activities. And just like building a house or whatever it is, it's something we can see it and say, hey, that's it. It's not a some smoke. It's not a pie in the sky. You don't hear me talking about the hereafter. I'm saying we can do better in this country, in America, than we have been by following the teachings of the God from the Bible, from the book, and other books. And again, there are examples. The Jewish community, the Amish community, even some of the others, the Asian community, the other the example of what they practice. They don't practice poverty. They practice coming together. You remember the story about the nine? So anyway, my time is up on that. So again, thank you, L.A., for the opportunity for me to just introduce this for more details on my site, and you find information there.
The example that I put out there earlier today on the Amish restaurant, which is a family-based business. I mean, one of the a la carte items is which sells for $3.50 per serving is mashed potatoes. And there's a whole bunch of people that know how to make mashed potatoes.
Yeah, that's how simple it is, right? It's not some rocket science mystery, right?
Right, lemonade or, and like I say, everybody within the family's got some type of talent, some type of wealth that can be converted into economic gain, so to speak. So, that's why I wanted to leak. No less than once a month, if not once a week, focusing on family capital, because it's probably the most one of the most abundant forms of wealth, but not it's not recognized. And then
that's right.
We've had, like, I'm just thinking about now the Great Migration, particularly the first wave of the Great Migration, where people, particularly black folk, they left the family wealth in the rural areas. And we're talking about people who had, like, hundreds of acres, if not a million acres of land, you know, collectively. They left the family wealth or family business on the farm, and they came into the city and totally forgot about and then used their skill sets to make somebody else rich. So
what happened?
You're right. They're yeah, we need to, because like I say, some people have hundreds, if not a thousand years or so of examples. Example after example. But we need to expose what is out there and then educate people coming up in particular. Okay, this is family wealth. Because if you think about it now, the people that go to the social services office, they essentially don't have any, either they have little or no family capital due to they don't recognize it, or they burnt bridges, or I know so any number of things that can. We're going to get a social worker on here one day to break that down. But Social Security, I mean, the Social Services Office is basically for people who don't have family capital or social capital, or very little of either one of them. Very little of either one of them. So, and that's a whole. You know, how do you, let's see, recognize family capital, and how do you maintain it, and keep the peace, so to speak. So Delmar, when do you have your what times are your podcasts on, and what how can they listen in?
Right now, I'm simply recording and storing them. I don't have a schedule due to where I am in the process. That's why I established the Internet so people can go there. It's called On Demand. They can look down through and see any topic and just click on and listen to it anytime they want to. In fact, one of the things I love about it is that you can stop it, back it up, play it four or five times, take notes. It's definitely an educational process. I tell people, if you're looking for a sermon to get excited, feel good, you're going to be disappointed because I don't do that. I am teaching and hoping, helping people get information that they can put to use and tell me later on, hey, this works. And it does.
Now, Native Americans do this too, because many Native American tribes, they organize on a tribal basis, and they might open up a golf course, you know, resort, hotels, and you know, a lot of them are making pretty good money off it, and they generate enough money where the people who are within the tribe get a check. Without even working on a day-to-day basis with the particular tribal business. You know, if you find yourself lacking with friends, and I'm looking at even at the creation story, you know, Adam and Eve, I would say was the first two examples of family wealth. They had a garden. And then Cain and Abel came in after that. So at one time they had they had, their family business, so to speak, was comprised of, four people. And I'm not a pastor or anything like that, but supposedly we'll get into that one day and break all that down. But if you look at Abraham, he had a lot of family capital. You know, I would even say Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, that's family capital there because Joseph taught Jesus the family business, which was, at least father and son, carpentry, which is a portable profession. So, like I said, we're probably going to at least touch on this topic some kind of way at least once a week. Because it's so fundamental and out there. Delmar, any other thoughts that you want to put out there before we wrap it up for today?
Yeah, again, I'd like to stress that this information, it ought to be transformational. It has to be repetitious. You cannot hear it one time or two times and talk about 20 other things and for it to work. As you say,
right.
When you look at what works, you find that the Amish and anybody else, whatever community, where they practice that. Example, since you mentioned it, you can look at certain nationalities, people that come to this country, and they have targeted a certain industry. If you check out the hospitality industry, and most of the non-franchise hotels and motels are owned by Indians. People from India.
The Patel family.
Check
You're
it out.
Absolutely right.
Anywhere. That's right. That's a culture. They bumped it up. Now, at Chicago, for instance, where I am right now and have lived several years, they have the Dunkin' Donuts. That's all owned by Indians. And you go to other industries, and you find that a certain culture or race or whatever you want to call it, nationality, has purchased that pretty much. They targeted that, and they got it sold up. The Hispanic people, they are targeting certain industries, and they are taking control of it. In fact, what's happening in some places, it's happening in Memphis, it's happening in Chicago, they're going in, taking over complete neighborhoods. All the abandoned houses in that place, they're going in there, and they're occupying it. And so, again, the pattern of what to do, and L.A., you and I talked about this morning, it's right out there. It's common sense. It's not some kind of brain science you got to figure it out. Look at what people are doing. So if we want to be serious about getting the results, we got to be due diligence, read the book 20 times, put our heads together, and do the work, and the proof will be right there for anybody to see it.
You're right. Absolutely. I know, I don't know how it is now, but at one time, it still might exist. The Polish community in Baltimore, Maryland, had a lockdown on the Baltimore Harbor, the docks there, the longshoremen and stevedores and that type of thing. They had they still might have it, but they had a solid lockdown on that. And I imagine in a place like Chicago, because Chicago's ethnic. You have various ethnic groups in Chicago.
Yeah.
You know, so that city alone is worth.
Well, go out Hollywood. Who owns Hollywood production?
Jewish people.
Did you? You thought it? I was gonna say still do, but they had that.
No, they
that
still got
there.
A strong. They got a stronghold in that.
That's right. Now they don't say that or promote that or shake their fist in the air to tell people that. But behind
no,
the
yeah,
scenes,
they don't wear
paper.
It on the sleeve, but. Right, the writers, or well, you take like the, there's some YouTube videos on this, like Jimmy Walker on Good Times or whatever. Good Times, the writers for Good Times, although the creator, the guy who came up with the idea was black. I think Eric Nagy is his name from Chicago. But the writers for the show and the people who produced the show, all Jewish.
Made the money, what you mean. Well,
yep.
Made the money.
Right.
Norman Lear, still alive, 100 years old, by the way, right?
Yep.
That's who did that. That's right.
Norman Lear, and then like all of his work. Now, Jimmy Walker and I think Bernadette Stannis, who played Thelma on here, they said now occasionally they would ask some of the black actors about, you know, certain references or cultural references or whatever. But, like you just said, Norman Lear and the writing staff and that, I mean, the Academy Awards basically, if you look at the history of Hollywood, that's basically an award show to highlight Jewish talent originally. You know, they highlight everybody now, but they still control it. You know, so, right, people pick out, you know, they pick out a market, a niche, and they do well with it.
Well, let's ask you a question. We know that Jews by faith don't eat pork, right?
Right.
But check out who's raising and selling more pork than anybody else. See, they see those opportunities to make money. They don't have to believe in it or participate in it. So they don't eat pork. But you go to
right. Well, you know, speaking with you, using that example.
See who's on that.
Right. The Marriott Corporation, which Bill Marriott and I forgot, Willard Marriott, the founders of it, they're Mormon. Now, Mormons, for the most part, don't drink alcohol. Right. But in all of their hotels, they had a bar that served alcohol because it was just, he said, that's the way those businesses run. Although they personally don't indulge. But, you know, they found their niche was in, accommodations, but, you know, the Marriott hotels and whatnot. And, that's the way they ran it. So, thank you, Delmar, for the family capital. Yeah.
As you now said, it's more than the doctor out there. We got to do is connect them, and we can do. Have
right,
success.
We have to connect
the
dots.
What we know that works,
and that you know what that's what the Patel like. You know what, when I go to Taft, Oklahoma, which is a historic black township in Oklahoma in Muskogee County, Taft didn't have any accommodation, so I had to stay in Muskogee. And let's see, I remember once I was down there for Memorial Day, so I had to move out of the Motel 6 where I was. And then there was a whole strip of motels across the street, and every last one of them was owned and operated by a family or different families of Indians. Not American Indians, but, you know, East Indians.
Right.
Every last
right.
one of those was
here. That's right. That's a fact. That's a fact.
Yeah, they got a lockdown on that. They have a lockdown on that. So, all right. Well, Delmar, thank you again for Family Capital. We will cover this in some kind of capacity at least once a week, even if it's just for 30 minutes to an hour, but at least once a week, because it's such a fundamental part of life, really. And I think a lot of people don't realize, wait a minute, our family's got some capital, and there are talents within each family. Now, like I said, how many people listening to that can make somebody out there listening can make a really good whipped mashed potato. Somebody out there can make a good peach cobbler. Somebody out there can make some really good sweet tea. Or lemonade. You know, getting off the food thing, somebody out there is probably one of the best grass cutters out there, but we don't know who you are. So these are talents we're all within the family. But we have to recognize those talents, and we have to organize those talents so that people in the family, you can turn your family wealth in the paychecks. The Amish do it. The Patel family does it with Now you take with the Patel families, with the motels. Okay, once again, those are basically family-based operations. And somebody is good at housekeeping. They know how to clean the rooms, including the bathrooms, and change the sheets. So when you come in there, everything's comfortable and cozy, you know, for your stay at their particular location. Somebody's good at booking the reservation. Somebody's good at the accounting, the bookkeeping. These are all family members. They're not hiring outside people to do this. You know, you mentioned, was it Dunkin' Donuts, Del Mar?
Yes. Indian Cafe.
Right.
Chicago.
You know, so family wealth, I think the most important thing with family wealth is recognizing within your family, although y'all might not agree on everything, but just recognize the wealth that's within that household. And then think about, now, what if y'all can put aside differences and turn
well, LA, you're
and convert
it's
their
it's
family wealth?
It ain't about no emotions. It's a business
right.
decision. Once
it,
the family
it,
makes
there you
that
go.
Business,
it's
decision,
a business decision,
all that little personal stuff goes out the window. No, it's a
right.
business decision.
And a lot of people get caught, you know, a lot of people lose sight of that. They get caught up emotionally and don't even think business.
Yeah. And
well,
that's a
family
lose.
Situation.
That's a losing position. Yeah.
Right. If you're in a family situation where, you know, you're facing some serious economic hard times, you have enough people in your family, even if it's just two. And like Delmar just stated, make a business decision. You know, maybe you're good, you know, it's Friday. Maybe you're really good at cooking seafood dinners or chicken dinners or baking pies, cutting grass. There is, you know, we're going to take inventory every week on this, every Friday. Matter of fact, you know what, from here on out, the whole year, Fridays are family capital day. So Delmar, you got advance notice.
Okay.
We need to hear on every Friday.
Okay.
It's Family Capital Day.
Okay.
Every Friday. Okay. So, all right. Thank you, Delmar. Once again, thank you everybody else for listening. Everyone have a good rest of the day. And then think about you know, people that are listening. You know, think about push the emotion away. Like Delmar stated, this is business. How much family capital? You know, how much family wealth do you have within your household? Forget about the arguments, fussing, and fighting. Think business. You'll be amazed.